Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm your host, Sandy Fowler, reminding you to head over to mightyparenting.com to get your free email series on communicating with your teen. And then catch up with us on social media. Pop on over to Facebook. You can like and follow our Mighty Parenting page, and you can join the Facebook group. You can also connect with us on Instagram, where you can follow us, like and comment on posts, and get that conversation going over there as well. So pick your favorite platform and look for at Mighty Parenting, and we will see you on social media. If you are a longtime listener, then you know that we have talked about drug and alcohol addiction. We've talked about emotional pain, emotional wellness. We've talked about body image. And these topics all, in my mind, play a part in today's topic, which is food addiction. And I think food addiction actually almost sounds a little inauthentic or kind of crazy. Like, how can we be addicted to food? It's just strange because we need food to survive, right? I mean, it's not something we can do without. So how could someone actually be addicted to it? Well, Jennifer Alembic is going to answer that question for us and many more. Jennifer is a food addiction coach and recovering food addict who has devoted her life to speaking, writing, and coaching on this debilitating disease. And today, she's going to help us understand what it is, what it might look like in our kids, and how to navigate it. Jenny, welcome to Mighty Parenting.
Thank you, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
I find this really a very interesting topic, and it is one that I think most of us haven't ever really had a discussion about, even if we're aware that it's a thing, or people tend to kind of make offhand comments. But I don't think it's something that we really have honest, heartfelt, serious discussions about. So maybe you can back us up to that beginning and tell us, like, what exactly is food addiction?
Okay, I'm going to give you like just the generic definition, which is food addiction is characterized by an obsession with food, an obsession with weight, and a loss of control over the amount eaten. So with that definition, come on, what do women talk about all day long? Diets and food. Most women are concerned about their weight, and they might not have an obsession with food. They can have just one of those parts. But the way that I characterize it is there's a huge spectrum with food addiction, huge spectrum. The people that are on the end where they're obsessing daily and where it's interfering with their life, those are the, you know, those are the people that I work with and address. Now, I consider food addiction often starts at the base with sugar and flour. And as a country, since 80% of our food on the shelves in a supermarket have added sugars, we just naturally, it's in our system. So if I took any regular person who regularly eats off sugar and flour, they're going to go through some level of detox because it's just in our system. But there are people that don't realize how much they spend thinking about food, cooking food, worrying about reservations. And it's just, it's so a part of this culture where there's no longer breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We eat all day long. If you go to a meeting, doesn't matter what time of day it is, there's food in the middle of the table to discuss. People are constantly noshing, constantly eating. And unfortunately, we are a processed food. We're in the processed food culture. I mean, that's mostly what people eat.
Well, you've used this word already a few times, culture, because Well, if food has always been a part of every culture in different ways and different degrees. And I'm thinking about the American culture and what role that plays here. And I think there's still carryover of the socializing and things from, say, the olden days, from immigrants who tended to collect, you know, family and friends around a good meal. But there was more to it than that. It feels now like food is almost, like you said, it's at every meeting, it's every event. It's like we can't do anything without a pile of food, but it's also not this thought out, planned out event and meal. This is really funny. So the movie Kate and Leopold, I don't know if you've ever seen it,
yes, but I have.
So for anyone who hasn't, Leopold is a duke from New York back, I don't know. It's horses and carriages and whatnot. And Kate is a modern day girl and he ends up falling through time and they have breakfast together I think it was dinner initially, whatever meal it was first. She puts the food out and he is absolutely appalled by it. And he's like, where I come from, a meal is the product of thought and introspection. It's an art. Making food is an art. And so there was all this thought and warmth and appreciation that went into making it. And then when we ate slowly and we savored the food and we savored the company. And that's just not what our culture is about anymore. Food is inhale on the run and all the time. Mm-hmm. But yet there's, as you also mentioned, this, we have to think about it all the time. And I know for the stay-at-home parent, mom or dad, somebody is always thinking about, well, what's this family going to eat? When am I going to grocery shopping? What time am I going to cook? What time does everybody have to be someplace? When can we actually have a dinner on the table? Or when do I have to have food ready for people to grab on the run? Mm-hmm. We don't have a healthy culture around food anymore.
Not at all. Not at all. But it is something you have to establish. It is something that takes time and thought and preparation. Because we are busy families. You know, I have three kids and it's managing their schedules and who has to be where. But most nights I have dinner on the table and we eat early because the kids usually have to be somewhere around 5:30 and 6, somewhere in between there. So there's dinner on the table at 4:30 and they get home and they're starving. So instead of having the after school snack, it's have a healthy meal. And then they can have snack when they get home from whatever event they're having, which I like better because you shouldn't be eating a heavy meal at night anyway. It's better for their digestion to eat earlier.
So you said food addiction, one of the aspects of that is obsession with food. Mm-hmm. Now, me being constantly thinking about it because I'm managing a family is not the same as obsessing about it. And we're parents. So let's talk about our kids first. What might obsessing about food look like coming from one of our kids? How would we recognize that?
You know, with kids, it's going to be especially like teenage and under, they're more obsessed with their weight. That's what they're more focused on. I have three daughters. So this has been my personal experience with them. It's more about the weight. And that is with a lot of women, actually. It's more about the weight. They don't realize that they have a food problem. With my kids, like I notice, okay, my older one definitely is way more concerned about her weight and definitely has part of the addiction. Like if she has a slice of pizza, she can't just enjoy it and move on like normal people. She obsesses about like, oh my God, now I feel so terrible. She feels fat. And it plays a whole mental game on her psyche. And she came to me when she was 16 because I don't eat sugar and flour. And I've been eating this way for six years. And she came to me and said, can you teach me how to eat healthy? Can you teach me the way that you do it? So I taught her. I spent 10 days. I said, I'll give you 10 days because she needed to learn and be responsible for her own food. And I taught her how to cook, how to make a well-balanced meal, and to eat just three meals a day and nothing in between. And she lost 12 pounds and she was very happy. And but she felt better, more so than the weight. She felt so good. She had more energy. She felt good about herself, and she wasn't obsessing about her weight anymore.
Okay. So I want to hear more about that. Is what about this helped her to not obsess?
She had discipline around food. She knew at nighttime, she would, just like I do, I write my food down every night. I know exactly what I'm going to eat when I wake up in the morning. Most people open the refrigerator 10 times. I don't know what to eat. I'm hungry. What should I eat? I'm bored. I'm hungry. They're constantly going back. You know, for somebody who's looking to lose weight or get their food under control, you have to have a plan. So I write down my food every night, and usually it's stuff that I've already pre-cooked and in the Tupperware and ready to go so I can just pack it and eat it. And so she would do that. And then she knew I also weigh and measure my food because quantities is a big issue. We definitely don't really know. People don't know what 4 ounces is, 6 ounces is, or what a healthy portion is at this point. Most people don't know because we have restaurants, certain restaurants that just pour on the food, and the portion sizes in the American restaurants are huge. So we've lost a little reality on what is the proper portion size. And also through this food plan, she was not eating sugar and flour. She was eating fresh food. So she would make baked chicken and turkey burgers, and it was all fresh vegetables, whether she steamed them or roasted them. And she would make sweet potato roasted or some black rice or some brown rice. She learned how to eat healthy with proper portions and salads. And everything was fresh, no processed food. And that skill she has today, she's 19, she's a freshman in college, and she knows how to eat. And I think it was one of the greatest gifts I could give her as a mom.
Oh, sure. Well, and to release her from mental jail of just it, and the abuse to her self-esteem, right? Out constantly thinking that she's overweight and to be out of control. I never thought of it that way before, that it's really, in a sense, being out of control and feeling out of control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just a yucky feeling, especially for a teenager. You know, they are not, they're subject, they're constantly, little girls, they're constantly comparing themselves to the images that they see, to the friends that they have. I mean, I hear the craziest things, and I am just all about balance. There has to be balance, and we have to teach our children, you know, to learn how to love themselves. You know, I was talking to a client today. There is a difference between self-care and self-love. Now, self-care is the stuff we take from the outside to make ourselves feel better on the inside. We do our nails, we get our hair done, we get facials. That is self-care. Self-love is watching the things that you say to yourself. Learn to say and talk positively to yourself and lovingly to yourself. But that does not come natural to human beings. We are wired negatively and pessimistically. That just comes natural. So I just had a conversation with my 12-year-old and my 14-year-old yesterday, because the 14-year-old had an issue. And I said, listen to the way you're talking to yourself. I said, would you talk to your friend the way you're talking to yourself? She was really getting down on herself. And that's a skill, another skill. How are we talking to ourselves? Am I treating myself in a loving way? And girls are harsh on themselves. Their hair's not long enough. They get pimples. They go through this awkward stage when they're, you know, between 12 and 16. There's a lot of stuff that goes on there. And as parents, we really have to be present. But we don't think of those things. Parents are more concerned with their grades, and they're more concerned with, do they have friends? Are they socializing? And I'm more concerned with my children's emotional wellness as well as their physical. Of course, that's important. And we all love our children. No parent, you know, we all are doing the best we can. But when you have teenage girls, that's something that we really have to focus on, is what are they saying to themselves when they look in the mirror? And we have to teach them, and we have to be a role model, because a lot of moms, you know what? They do the same thing. Ugh, I look so fat in these jeans. Ugh, I feel so fat. But they don't realize it. Mm-hmm. So what we say and the words we use are very important.
I love your distinction there between self-care and self-love. And I'm a stress relief coach. I absolutely get into self-care and have gotten into the nuances of, yes, you know, some of these other things are great and they're fun and it is nice to do for ourselves, but getting down to, you know, what really fills you up and things. But this idea of self-love and how you talk to yourself, what you say to yourself is, I think, just mind-blowing, really. That's a skill, like you said, to teach and model for our kids. What I'm wondering is, do you think that the food addiction comes from those, say, negative self-talk and things? Do you think that that can create a food addiction?
I think it plays a role, but here's an interesting thing. I've been in 12-step recovery since I'm 21, and that was, so it's been almost 30 years. And I have watched people in addiction of all sorts, whether it's sex addiction, gambling, alcohol, food, I've seen it all. And what I've learned is that addiction doesn't discriminate. And what I mean by that is it doesn't matter if you came from the most loving home or the most dysfunctional home. Sometimes people just become addicts. Like they're, for me, I have a physical allergy to sugar and flour. Maybe my body just had so much of it over the years that it turned on me. I don't know. Do I think there's an emotional component? Yes. But I think there's more than that. The science backs it up that we are physically, our brains are light up like Christmas trees when we put sugar in our body. And for some, it's more than others. So for me, it's a physical allergy, just like alcoholism. People have a physical allergy where they can no longer drink in safety. There's no such thing as moderation for certain people. And that's why I talk about food addiction on a spectrum. There are people that know that they can't have chocolate. Like if they have chocolate, they just will go out of control with it. But they can have a cookie or a cookie without chocolate, or they can eat other things. But then there are people like me who just have been gaining and losing weight and are in tears because they just don't know what's wrong with them. And here's something very important that really irks me as a recovering food addict. I went to treatment when I was 21 for food addiction. Didn't work. And they taught me that sugar was an issue, but they never addressed flour. And if you're a food addict or somebody who uses food to numb out and fill up and just check out, you're going to abuse, you know, you could eat tons of carbs and it turns into sugar in your body anyway. So that's why we stay away from sugar and flour. It's not just brown flour, like certain flours are okay. It's all flour that you're going to wind up binging on. Well, food addicts are very manipulative. It's like, oh, well, you know, it's just like an alcoholic, like, oh, you know what? I have a problem with vodka, but I don't have a problem with beer. So I'll just drink beer. You know, we try and manipulate those things. But eventually, if you really do have a problem with alcohol, all the beer in the world, you'll eventually start using other things and drinking other alcohol to get the hit that you're looking for from it. So back to the question you asked me, I think there's more than just the emotional. I think food addiction is a mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual disease, and we have to treat it on all levels. The reason why most people are not successful on diets and go up and down and up and down most of their life is because most of them do have an addiction to sugar and flour, whether they know it or not. I've worked with so many people that have come to very slowly realize their behaviors around food. But it's kind of like a baby. The baby never knows it has a problem with a pacifier until you take it out of their mouth. And that's the same with food.
Okay, so let's go back again and talk about what food addiction looks like. Because as you said, there's the spectrum and you've touched on a few different things. And you know, one is you said eating food to numb out. Mm-hmm. And again, it goes back to our culture, and especially for women. I know in college, I was living in a house with 22 women, and any weekend night, you were going to go down to the kitchen and find a group of them eating food and complaining about whatever their problems were, dealing, you know, quote unquote, dealing with their problems, which wasn't really dealing. It was just commiserating.
Right.
And so we would say, well, it's emotional eating. But what's the difference between emotional eating and food addiction?
It's all the same. What do you mean emotionally eating? Who doesn't have feelings?
Mm-hmm.
Find me one person who doesn't have feelings and said, gee, a donut would be good right now. Doesn't make you a food addict. And that's just, you know, I love it. Eating disorders, we've got all sorts of definitions. It's all sorts of for what? It all includes obsession. If you're a bulimorexic, you're obsessed with not eating and getting rid of it. If you're an anorexic, you are obsessed with not gaining weight and not eating food. If you are an emotional eater, what is that? That's a soft way of saying giving yourself an excuse to eat because you have emotions. Everybody has emotions. And let me also say that it's not just because you are overweight does not make you a food addict. It really has to do with how you use food. But most people don't stop long enough to pay attention to how they use food. They don't get off it long enough, or they can't sustain the food plan. Most, you know, diets are a billions and billions and billions of dollar business. Why? Because people just can't not eat. And they choose, like when I tell people I don't eat sugar and flour, their first response, whether they have an issue with food or not, is, oh, I can never do that. Okay, so then keep going on every other diet that you've tried that doesn't work. You know why they don't work? Because they all include sugar. Every single protein drink, they have sugar, or they have some form of sugar. They try to, like, oh, we dry up beets and we use the beetroot thing. I mean, it's all the same. They all have sugar. You know, Weight Watchers makes a killing off their bars, but you know, you go in the car, you eat the whole box, and you know, there's your points for the day.
It actually is fascinating to me just how impactful sugar is. A couple years ago, we made a drastic dietary change due to some health problems that my daughter was having. And that was part of it, was there was no sugar. No, it's not just no flour, it was no grains, no processed food. It was mostly mm-hmm. vegetables with small servings of healthy proteins mm-hmm. and you know, some fruit. One piece a day is kind of what we're looking at. And some days there's none. And certainly no juice or anything like that, because right. that is concentrated sugar. And it just struck me after we'd been on the diet for a while. Well, one, how my cravings changed, mm-hmm. but two, when I would have something with just say, quote unquote, a little bit of sugar on it, like say ketchup, you know, people don't mm-hmm. think about the fact ketchup has sugar in it. So that's something I just wasn't eating. And, you know, I just put a little bit on a hot dog or a little bit on something I used to eat that had, you know, I used to put ketchup on. And it surprised me how much it affected me. Or I found, like you said, you know, sometimes you can eat this, you can eat that. I could eat dark chocolate that is 85% cocoa or more and be fine. But you even go back to 70, I eat a piece and I'm craving more.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sugar's powerful.
Yeah, it is. But let's talk about this statement you made. You said it's about how you use food.
Mm-hmm.
Would you unpack that for us, please?
Sure. You know, there's a lot of moms, they cannot wait for their kids to go to bed so they could just be alone with the bag and the TV and the box and the TV. You know, you talked about people don't talk about, women don't talk about food addiction. We're very comfortable talking about our weight. We don't talk about our behaviors around food because gluttony is not sexy. It's not sexy to tell somebody you threw up three times today. Women don't talk about the box of laxatives they took the night before. They only talk about their weight and what they're eating and what they're not and what new diet they're trying. They don't tell you that they maybe swung by and had some fast food before dinner, or they're hiding food in their house, or they dug food out of the garbage, or their car is full of wrappers. There's so many behaviors, but it comes a point where you're so into the food that it's not about, you can't even recognize that you're eating and numbing out. You just have to have the food, just like an addict has to have their drug. It's the same urgency and desperation.
So if we're looking at our kids, what would we look for to say, hey, you know, I think there's a real problem here?
Mm-hmm. You want to, first of all, have family meals and notice if they're eating. You want to notice, pay attention to the snacks, like how much you're buying and how fast is it disappearing. You want to notice if there's, you know, are they gaining weight? Are they happy? I mean, it's really hard with kids. You have to keep communication open because they can look perfectly healthy, but it's how they're feeling in their body. So it's easy to tell if a kid is very overweight, then we know that there's an issue. And, you know, that's unfortunate because it's really the parents are responsible for feeding the kid and making the meals and stuff.
Well, or there can be a health issue too, which we should be investigating. You know, so if we're seeing this kind of thing, because, you know, I know people who have, especially in this day and age, you get the whole adrenal system out of whack with the stress and the anxiety. And for some people, when that happens, it messes up their weight under, over, and all of that too. So again, if we're seeing these things in our kids, then it is important to check it out, to get a physical, to keep those conversations open.
100%. But you know, when kids are doing behaviors that they're uncomfortable with, they lie about them. So it's really, you really have to know and keep that communication open. Of course, if you see a problem, first thing, take them to the doctor, get their blood checked, make sure that all their levels are okay, that there's no pre-diabetes going on or anything like that, God forbid. But it's really about how are they feeling in their body? Because like I said, they can look perfectly normal and they could show you that they're eating perfectly normal, but it's the words that they're telling themselves, because many, many, many women suffer from body dysmorphia. You know, they feel fat, but they look amazing. But in their head, in their mind, they don't.
Yeah, it was interesting to me. So in doing this diet, I have a slender build, always have good metabolism, mm-hmm. fine and dandy. And when I follow this diet well, and I'm not eating any processed foods and sugars and things, I have to eat a fair amount of food to keep my weight up.
Yes, you do.
And I had been working out and I was busy and just wasn't really eating quite as much as I should. I didn't feel hungry, or, you know, I would be hungry, but I'm out somewhere where I couldn't get something good. So I'd wait till I was home. By then you're not hungry, all that craziness. Until one day my husband looked at me, he's like, oh my gosh, you are getting thigh gap. And I'm like, no way. I mean, I see myself in a mirror every day. As soon as he said that, I could see it. But the day before, when I saw myself, you know, after I got out of the shower or whatever, because there's a big mirror right there in the bathroom, right? Mm-hmm. I very literally did not see the same body from one day to the next.
Yeah.
I mean,
women suffer with that a lot.
It was just, I mean, I don't think I've ever had that before. I don't know, but it was just such an eye-opening experience and gave me such an appreciation for people who are anorexic or have another eating disorder where they're not seeing reality.
Right.
Because how do you fight that? That's so challenging and so difficult for people.
You know what? You brought up a good thing. Also with kids, make sure they're not counting calories and carbs and milligrams of this and that. That is part of addiction. That is obsession. Nobody should be counting. If you are eating healthy, well-balanced meals, there is absolutely no need to be counting anything. That's number one.
Well, how is that different from the weighing and portions? Help me understand that.
Because all I am is weighing my food, but I know it's all healthy food, so I don't have to worry about my weight. but I'm not trying to, you know, there's no one thing. Like, my body is different than yours. Mm-hmm. So I might have to eat more food to maintain a certain weight than you do. So, but that's different than saying 1200 calories a day. And the problem with calories is they are not equal. Mm-hmm. One calorie does not equal one calorie. A calorie can, certain healthy calories that have fruits and vegetables and all the minerals and vitamins that we need is not equal to the same calorie that's in a soda drink.
Okay. So the weighing just helps you start getting an idea of what portions are for you. Because those will be, as you said, different from person to person.
Well, it's different from person to person as far as what an individual body needs to maintain a weight, mm-hmm. From male to female to anybody. So that's one thing. The other thing is that addicts like quantity. Many food addicts like quantity. They just like to be full, like really full. And that's part of addiction as well, like stuffing yourself to numb out. It's just another way to numb out. I was dealing with somebody that really couldn't care less whether she was eating sugar or flour because she could binge on plain Greek yogurt and fruit. Like, she would just eat tons of it. So it's just about, you know, quantities is part of the addiction. That's why we weigh. So we know that we're getting healthy, portionate amounts and that we're done. Our meal is over. We don't keep going. And another thing with children is watch their exercise. It's important to make sure they're exercising, but teenage girls definitely have a and even boys. I have to say that boys, the thing with exercise that you have to be careful that it is balanced, because in our society, we reward thin and cut and somebody who goes to the gym 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, we're like, you are so awesome. That's really not awesome. That's not, unless you're looking to be a gym rat or some, like, what is that? You know, you get paid to like weightlift or something. Like, that's not a way to
measure. Oh, if you're going to be a professional weightlifter or bodybuilder.
Sorry, it didn't come out.
That's okay. Or even certain athletes. I mean, if you are an Olympic or professional level athlete, that's a different story. But we're talking about high school kids.
Yes. But if your 16-year-old boy or girl is obsessed with going to the gym and they've got to work out and they've got to build up, it's like, okay, I get that you want to be healthy and you want to look good, but balance. Like, being there every day, 3 days, you know, 7 days a week for 3 hours is not normal. But in our society, we have to be careful because we reward that. Like, a girl who looks amazing in her yoga pants and her yoga clothes, but she's going to the gym all the time. That's not healthy. Do you see what I'm saying? There's a mm-hmm. fine line. So we really have to understand what our kids are doing, why they're doing it, what are their motives, and really dig into, you know, how you feeling about yourself? Because there are people that are overweight and feel great in their body. They love who they are. And that's wonderful. That's the most important thing.
Well, exactly. And no matter what the body is like, this is what we want, right? Is we want our kids to feel good. And you talked about emotional eating, which is something I have struggled with. If mm-hmm. people listen for a long time, I'm sure they've heard comments here and there from me about that. And it's actually my work in stress relief and emotional wellness that has helped with that so much. Because as you said, you're stuffing your feelings, you're numbing out, you're not dealing with those emotions. And I would recommend anyone who's listening now who is struggling with that, go back to episode 103. It was in December with Jude Bijou, because it is all about processing emotions. So we're not going to get into that here because we're going to run out of time. We can't get into everything. So you've given us some great things for parents to do. Are there common things you see parents do inadvertently that actually exacerbate these problems?
You have to watch what you say to your kids, because a lot of parents comment and they don't realize that it's harming their children. Like, you're going to walk out of the house like that, you know, whether it's too much makeup, too little makeup, the dress is too tight, the dress is too short. Like, be aware of your tone of voice when you talk to your children. Be careful what you're saying, because children are so sensitive. We're sensitive. They are very sensitive, and what you think about them matters. So you can say, oh, I love my children unconditionally, but you can make one comment and they don't feel that you love them unconditionally. So you have to be very careful to watch our words and what we're saying in front of our children, especially when it comes to their looks and their appearance.
Okay, so going back over what we've talked about, just to kind of hit some of the high points here. And you said that a food addiction is an obsession with food or weight and or a lack of control over the amount eaten. And there's a huge spectrum here. So it can be lots of different things, but it's really all about still obsessing in one way or another about it.
Yeah. Food addiction is when it's interrupting your daily life. When you're at work and you're supposed to be working on a project and you really can only obsess about the donuts that are sitting in the coffee break room, you know, that's the spectrum that I deal with. Like, is it interfering with your life? It's making you miserable. And I have met women that are powerhouses, very successful CEOs, and they work and run companies, but you know what? They feel like shit in their body every morning when they wake up. Like, that's not the way it's supposed to be. There's another way. So I'm here to help women who are suffering with any food and weight body issues. That's what I do. You could call it food addiction. You could say, I'm not a food addict, but I have this issue. Anybody who's uncomfortable with their food and their body, and they want to change and they want to feel great in the skin that they're in. Sometimes it starts with the food. You got to clean it up.
Okay. And then, so for our kids, we want them to have a life that has balance in it, balance in working out, balance in eating. We want to make sure that we're teaching them the difference between self-care and self-love. Yes, we need self-care, and self-love is essential. And in doing that, we want to watch what we say to them and tones of voice. We also need to model it for them. So we need to learn to love ourselves and watch the way that we're handling food. You said planning family dinners, having that time together is one time that we can be looking to see, you know, are we seeing any kind of an issue? It's also, again, a time to be modeling healthy food behaviors. And if we are concerned about something our kids are doing, what we want to do is dig in a little to the motives and go, you know, what's up with this? And how are you feeling in your body? There's so much here. There's, like we said, there's so much in our culture, and these aren't conversations that are had honestly. So I really, Jenny, appreciate you having this conversation with us. We will, of course, have a link to you in the show notes, but for anyone who wants more information or wants to get in touch with you, could you share your website?
Yeah, it's Jennifer Alembic. I'm going to spell the last name, A-L-E-M as in Mary, B as in boy, I-K.com, JenniferAlembic.com, or I'm very active on Facebook, and you can look me up, Jennifer Alembic Coaching. That's my business page, and you can message me through there too.
Great. And thank you so much for joining me for this conversation today, Jenny.
You're welcome, Sandy. Thank you so much for having it. I appreciate it.
And Mighty Parents, thank you for being here. If you like the podcast, then please rate, review, and share it. Also remember, as I said, visit mightyparenting.com to get that free email series on how to talk to your teen. You'll also find Mighty Parenting gear and some more things there. Thank you for joining us today and for being part of the Mighty Parenting community. Remember that you are a mighty parent, so you've got this. I will see you next week.